It's game time, driven by Briggs Auto Lane and BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Here we go!
Hello and welcome into the game. I'm Tyler Dreiling, joined by Mitch Fortner. John is on the call for K-State baseball coming up tonight. It's the second most important sports game between K-State and Creighton of the week. K-State will face Creighton in baseball tonight and, of course, in basketball in the first round of the NCAA tournament coming up on Friday, and we will be talking a lot about that matchup as we get closer and closer to the game that will make a huge difference in how you view K-State season as a whole. We'll get more into that in the second hour. We'll be joined by Cole Manbeck, our Powercat game day blogger, as well, to get his thoughts on the matchup, some of our thoughts on the general brackets. Are we okay with Oklahoma getting in over Oklahoma State and Baylor? Some K-State women's basketball news as the Cats will be hosting in the WNIT. A lot of NFL news today, including one of the most beloved K-State football players of all time that is now on the market as of just a few minutes ago, and a new twist that I'm putting on the 40-yard dash. All of that to come as part of today's show. If you want to get in touch with us, 537-1350, 866-776-1350. You can also contact us on Twitter at TheGameKMAN, at Mitch TheFort, at Tyler Dreiling. And you can text into the show as well. Text KMAN to 59457 and respond with Y after the bounce back text, and you are good to go. Before we dig into K-State getting a 9 seed, I am just seeing this literally within a minute of coming onto the air. I did see this piece of news, and I guess if you're within the confines of the K-State basketball locker room, it's not something that you want to pay attention to because your focus is on Creighton. However, for us, I think it's fine to speculate a little bit. Virginia has announced that one of their top big men, DeAndre Hunter, is going to miss the rest of the season after suffering a broken wrist in practice. So Virginia, the top seed overall in the tournament, loses one of their big men. I would say that, you know, they are a very capable team with or without him, but he was their fourth leading scorer at 9.2 points a game, averaging 4 rebounds a game. I've heard him be called Virginia's top NBA prospect. So
I can hear brackets being shredded right now, I think.
Yeah, could be.
That's a game changer.
I mean, hey,
I had Virginia going a ways.
So that's the thing. I know that a few people turned in their brackets to you already for our office pool, but that's why you hold off until the start of the tournament, right? Because we could get more news about this kind of thing. Fortunately, it's good injury news for K-State, as it now seems pretty certain that both Barry Brown and Dean Wade will be available for K-State against Creighton. But if they are able to beat Creighton, they will be taking on a Virginia team that will be without 6'7", 222 big man DeAndre Hunter, who again will miss the rest of the season with a broken wrist. Now, in the second hour of the show, I'll talk about the major difference from last year's tournament to this one from K-State's perspective. But I wanted to lead off today's show just talking more in a general sense about K-State getting a 9 seed. And I think that it's really the perfect result to how everything took place this year. I don't think K-State deserved a lot better than a 9 seed, nor did they deserve to be, you know, sent back to Dayton or be you know, a 10 or 11 seed, in my opinion. I think this was about the perfect place for them to land. They were not, as we saw from the NCAA releasing their seed list, they were not particularly close to missing the tournament. There were 10 teams between K-State and the in-outline, so you feel like even if they wouldn't have beat TCU in the Big 12 tournament, they still would have been in decent shape. And I think that that's what they deserved. You look at a team that had some very strong elements of its resume and some pretty glaring weaknesses in its resume, and I think that is the overall result that you come to. A team that finished fourth in the Big 12 Conference, the top RPI conference in the country, that's more or less where they should be. And I really like this matchup with Creighton. We'll talk more about it in the second hour, but I think that this is a matchup that is very, very close. You know, I've felt in the past sometimes, I guess I really shouldn't say, only in the NCAA tournament, but you look at things like bowl games for K-State football, sometimes they've just been dealt a bad hand with their matchups in the postseason. I would say, you know, when they were matched up with Kentucky back in 2014 in an 8-9 matchup, that was a really tough draw for K-State, considering the talent that Kentucky had. You look back at some of the bowl games that K-State's played in the last 10 years, they've had some tough matchups there with going against teams with a lot more talent. I think Creighton and K-State are very, very similar. And statistically, they are similar when you break it all down. And so I think this is going to be a really fun matchup that obviously, of course, has the added intrigue with Creighton having Marcus Foster on the roster.
Well, and to continue on your topic there, I feel K-State did land in the toughest region of the NCAA tournament.
Probably.
Because Virginia's the number one overall selection, or number one seed. Kentucky won the SEC tournament, which obviously Kentucky's always good. By the way, Davidson is in that 5-12 matchup where Davidson had to win their conference tournament to get in, so they stole a bid. You have Cincinnati, who finished in second in the American, actually first in the American, and they're the 2 seed. Tennessee's been pretty good this year. Arizona, the top dog in the Pac-12 once again. It's a pretty loaded region, but K-State has probably the best 8-9 matchup of the tournament.
Well, I know that a lot of Virginia fans have been very upset with the way things have shaken out in their region, because they feel like if they are the number one overall seed, they should be playing in the easiest region, and that does not appear to be the case with all of the talents. You know, you just look at how many NBA players, future NBA players, are going to be competing in the South region. It's a lot. There's no doubt about that with Arizona and Kentucky in the mix. But from K-State's perspective, you know, I think that it just puts you in a pretty good spot that you're not going to have fans being extremely angry with you if you beat Creighton and then lose to Virginia. You know, if you do that, I feel like that's kind of your threshold for being satisfied with the season, because you just can't expect K-State to take down the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. If it happens, great, and that's what March Madness is all about. That would be incredible for K-State. But you're not going to, unless you were to like get blown out by Creighton, I think that fans are generally feeling okay with how everything is shaken out this year, which I think is a great sigh of relief, because it's been a trying season for K-State fans as they've tried, you know, to figure out what the direction of the program is going to be. Can Bruce Weber survive another mediocre type season? To be in this position where with one win, everyone should feel pretty good about things, I think is a great opportunity for K-State coming up on Friday.
Well, and here's how I feel about it. If you're looking at the bracket, you see K-State is in there as a 9 seed with how many wins? 22 wins this season, 11 losses. And you see teams with worse records with higher seeds. And when I say worse records, maybe not as many wins, or maybe didn't perform as well. The thing is, though, K-State, I think, was given this ceiling by the committee because of their non-conference schedule.
Probably.
And at the most, K-State was not going to get higher than the 8-9. And if they would have been in the 7-10, they're in as a 10 seed. I don't think there was ever a way they were going to work up to a 7,
no,
even if they won the Big 12 tournament.
If they would have beat KU and West Virginia, I would entertain the thought of them being a 7. But if they just would have beat KU, I think they still would have been an 8 and basically in the same position they're in now. Now, maybe not in the same region. Maybe they would have been playing either Xavier or Villanova in the second round. But ultimately, that's not a huge difference. And I think that probably speaks to the committee being satisfied with what K-State did in the course of the conference season. Now, they say the conference record doesn't matter, but I think that if you finish fourth, what I said a few weeks ago, I think conference record doesn't matter until a critical point where it has to matter. And I think K-State made it matter by finishing fourth in the highest RPI conference. That's just not something that the committee was able to ignore. And at Creighton finished fourth in the second highest RPI conference. I mean, this is a matchup of two teams that have some very strong strengths and some very glaring weaknesses. And Cole Manbeck pointed out a couple of those on each side for Creighton over the last couple of days, and I'm excited to talk to him more in depth about these. Creighton is a very poor rebounding team. Very, like, you thought K-State was a poor rebounding team. Creighton is worse, and they have been extremely bad since they lost one of their big men about two-thirds of the way through the regular season. And that's going to give K-State a chance. You know, we saw McCall Maween emerge late in the season, especially in the Big 12 tournament. I think this is a favorable matchup for him. Whereas if you're Creighton, you got to feel like it's a favorable matchup because you're a team that scores 84 points per game and you shoot the ball very well from the outside.
I'm glad you brought up Maween in the rebounding because you bring up the argument of with two bad rebounding teams, who's going to win in that aspect? It should be K-State all the way because K-State has turned themselves into a bad rebounding team to halfway decent, especially in the last couple of weeks.
They've been a lot better.
Maween has been a big part of that, grabbing offensive boards. He's been better at finishing, no doubt about that. He's brought K-State into another level when it comes to rebounding. Not just him, but Dean Wade has been in there as well. And I loved seeing the guards, especially lately. I know Ahmad Wainwright isn't scoring a whole lot, but he's grabbing rebounds, and he's flying in there to grab boards.
Well, and remember, Xavier Sneed may be shooting less than 20% from three over his last 10 games, but he is also grabbing like six rebounds a game in that period of time. Now, K-State will need the scoring from him if they're going to get to the Sweet 16. There is absolutely no doubt about that. But if you're just talking about things from a rebounding perspective, he has continued to do a nice job for K-State along with some of those other guys you mentioned, including and especially McCall Maween. I just saw this tweet from Jeff Goodman. He says, Jeff Goodman, you know, very respected reporter with ESPN. He says, to those who took Virginia to win it all, go ahead and change your brackets now. So apparently this is viewed as a very significant loss for the Cavaliers. Again, DeAndre Hunter, the fourth leading scorer and fourth leading rebounder for the Cavaliers, will miss the NCAA tournament with a broken wrist. K-State is focused on Creighton, but for us it's okay to peek ahead just a little bit, something to take note of here as the tournament approaches. Going to take our first break. When we come back, our thoughts on the hot topic of the week. Did Oklahoma deserve to get in over Oklahoma State? That's next on The Game. Was that the official word from the university? A threat of thunderstorms on Friday evening?
Yeah,
which is true. Okay, fine. But it's because of K-State basketball.
There's a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms on Friday night.
It's because of K-State
basketball. Showers likely on Friday.
It's because of K-State basketball. It has to be. Come on. That is kind of funny, though. I mean, yeah, now that I've said that, it's probably going to pour on Friday night, but I thought that that's what the move was for all along, was just to make it easier for K-State fans to enjoy both games. Welcome back to The Game. Tyler and Mitch with you up until 6 o'clock, and then we will hand it off to K-State baseball as the Batcats host Creighton this evening at Toyton Family Stadium. It's been a nationwide topic ever since the bracket was released. Actually, even sooner than that, it was from the very moment that the OU logo appeared during the first 10 minutes of the selection show on TBS, a selection show that did not go well, by the way. People have been very upset. Dick Vitale may be the leader among them that the Sooners and Trey Young are in the NCAA tournament. And I understand where the anger comes from, because if you want to look at Oklahoma and where things are at right now, I mean, they've lost 8 of their last 10 games. They've won a grand total of 7 games in the calendar year 2018. It has not been good. And so if you are going to be, you know, one of those people that believes that it should be who is playing the best basketball right now, then you're absolutely right. OU should have been left out in favor of, you know, I mean, you could throw several teams in there, but Oklahoma State seems to be the biggest example, just because the head-to-head standpoint and all of that. But I do want to remind people, because it seems like a whole bunch of people are forgetting, that the committee regularly, I mean, every 5 minutes when a committee member is talking on TV in any capacity, or the radio or whatever, says that it's about the entire body of work. They literally put that out there for you all the time. So I would say it's one of those things that, like, don't hate the players, hate the game. You can be very upset at that particular philosophy with the selections, that the committee is going to value games in November as much as they do games in February, but you can't be absolutely outraged that this happened if you're going to keep that into consideration. Does that make sense? Like, you have to understand that that is going to happen. So you can ask for the rules to be changed so that the committee does put more emphasis on how a team is currently playing, but don't act like this is an isolated event, that this never happens with a team getting into the tournament that hasn't been playing well as of late, because that happens all the time. It's just really polarizing this time around because there's that easy excuse to make that, oh, well, OU only gets to be in the tournament because of Trae Young.
Well, that's true.
I don't think
it is.
They
got him because of Trae Young.
I don't think it is. I think the committee stuck to what they have said for years, and that's that they look at the entire body of work. And I'm not saying that you can't make a case that Oklahoma State's entire body of work wasn't better than OU's. I think that's a different conversation, and there is an argument to be made there. But Oklahoma, out of the bubble teams, had the most quadrant one victories, which is the way that they are looking at it. And that stat does not come with, okay, those quadrant one victories came on this date and this date and this date and this date. It's just that it's a very simple number. How many quadrant one victories do you have? Oklahoma had six. That was the most out of the bubble teams. Therefore, they have a very good chance of getting in. Typically, I am on the side that I would be in favor of the conspiracy theory that they had to put the best, or not the best, but the most polarizing player in the tournament. But it didn't happen with Ben Simmons and LSU when they were a bubble team. LSU went to the NIT. So I think that the committee actually stayed pretty consistent with the values in this case. It's just a matter of a lot of people are upset with what those values happen to be. I do feel bad for Oklahoma State because they, with the quality of their top wins, you know, you can certainly make the case for them. But here's something that I will say, Mitch, that I think you'll agree with. The team that I would take out to put Oklahoma State in from the Big 12 would not be Oklahoma. It would be Texas.
Texas, absolutely. Yes. And I didn't think Texas should have been in at all.
I know. I know how you feel about Texas. Texas did not have as many top-end wins as Oklahoma State did. You know, again, similar finish in the conference. With Texas, I think you could maybe say that their name helped. Their name helped them get in. But I just have not really liked the comparison of Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. I would rather say take Texas out and put the Cowboys in.
Here's the deal. So I felt Oklahoma and Oklahoma State should have been in the tournament. I think Oklahoma State should actually be where Oklahoma is right now, which is a 10 seed against Rhode Island. Oklahoma should have been a play-in team. I think there's no doubt about it. Nobody has a lesser amount of wins or tied with the same amount of wins as Oklahoma does. They have 18 wins. Everybody else has equal or more to that. And the thing with Oklahoma State is you cannot ignore the fact that they beat Kansas twice. KU is a number one seed in this tournament in the Midwest region. And not only did Oklahoma State beat them twice, they kicked their ass.
Man, you're fired up on
this. This is the type of team you want in the NCAA tournament. The one that can create havoc like that, because it's going to bring some ratings. Plus, I would love to see, I mean, Rhode Island is a really good team, and I'm sure the Oklahoma game will be good, but I think Oklahoma State would be just as good. You can't forget that Trae Young is playing for Oklahoma. And that's got to be a big reason why they're in this tournament, because obviously they're going to prove it on that broadcast about how much they talk about him.
Well, yes, they're going to talk, but that's the broadcast. That's not the committee. Those are two different things. Well, and you know, I saw some people saying this is ESPN just wanted to get get Trae Young in the tournament. ESPN does not have the broadcast rights to the NCAA tournament. I agree that ESPN went way over the top with how they covered Trae Young.
Still going to happen,
but. And I see your text from the 785 saying BS, OU got in from a political standoff. or from a political standpoint of Young being a high-profile NCAA player. All I'm trying to say is that there you can't look at it in a vacuum and say this is the only legitimate reason that OU got in, because they do have some very strong aspects of their resume that people are just ignoring so that they can continue to pile on Trae Young. That's basically what I'm saying here. Now, we may have more time to discuss this later in the show. I wanted to fit this in as well because I just thought it was a lot of fun. ESPN has done this the last couple of years after around this time of year when the tournament bracket is announced. They will make their own 64-team college football bracket from this past season and project how it would have played out. And it could be kind of fun. It wouldn't have really been that notable to me if there weren't an interesting result with K-State in this tournament. First of all, Mitch, any guesses on what seed ESPN gave to K-State? Football.
Oh, football?
Yeah, so for the K-State football team for the 64-team tournament.
I would say a 6.
They gave K-State an 11 seed.
Oh, boy.
An 11 seed. In this tournament. Now, I would not say that's the most egregious seed. For some reason that I will never figure out, UCF is a 14 seed. And Nebraska is
the national champs.
And Nebraska is a 13 seed. So I don't know who did the seedings here. That is weird. But I will say that they gave K-State some credit because in the first round matchup, the 11-6 matchup, it was 11 seed K-State against 6 seed Florida. And they have K-State winning that one 33-27. And they said, an 11 seed is kind of perfect for Bill Snyder, isn't it? A coach who has led underdogs and overachievers throughout his career takes a dangerous team into the tournament. Behind quarterback Skylar Thompson and Alex Delton, K-State beats an overseeded Florida team that shows improvement on offense under Dan Mullen. So then you look at what happens after that. Let's see, the next round, I think K-State won one more game. They got to the Sweet 16, and then they got ousted. And the national champion was Clemson. So I thought that was kind of funny to look at it that way. Also, Alabama and West Virginia in a 1-versus-8 matchup in the second round. Oh, this was fitting, though. From an ESPN standpoint, you know you have to do this. Of course Texas made it to the Elite Eight. Of course they did. 5-seed Texas.
A 5-seed.
Goes to the Elite Eight. Okay, sure. All right, ESPN. Yeah, Texas. Actually, you know what? A 5-seed is fitting for Texas. You know why? Because that's how many games they win every year. Get out of here with Texas. And the Texas basketball team, for that matter. We've come full circle here. I don't want Texas as a 5-seed in the football tournament, and I don't want them as any seed in the basketball tournament. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right, we'll take our next break. While we are on the topic of football, one of the most beloved K-State football players of all time is on the open market. I'm looking at you, Kansas City. That's next on The Game. We'll be joined by Cole Manbeck at 5:10. Get his thoughts on K-State's NCAA tournament matchup with Creighton. If you want to give us or get in touch with us, 537-1350, 866-776-1350. At The Game KMAN, at Tyler Dreiling, at Mitch the Fort, and text KMAN to 59457. Before we started the show, I was on my Twitter page and looking at the trends column on the left side. You know what the top two trends in the United States were?
I know what they were, time? So I'm not going to spoil them for you.
Number two was Rex Tillerson, United States Secretary of State. Number one was Jordy Nelson, and Jordy Nelson is still the top trend in the United States. It is now official, by the way. It's no longer just the report from Adam Schefter. The Green Bay Packers have released Jordy Nelson, and he is on the market. I realize that the Chiefs also made a pretty sizable move today by bringing in DeAndre Hopkins, a very talented receiver cut from the same cloth of a Tyreek Hill, bringing him in from the Rams, but if you are a very young offense, which the Chiefs are going to be next year because you've got Patrick Mahomes, you've got Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill is still a pretty young player, DeAndre Hopkins a pretty young player, don't you think it would make sense to have the veteran presence of an established, even-keeled Super Bowl champion in Jordy Nelson?
Yeah, the Chiefs aren't getting Jordy Nelson.
I can't, just let me dream for at least an hour.
Well, the money they're paying Sammy Watkins for a second. I mean, that's $48 million for 3 years.
Oh, Sammy Watkins, or DeAndre Hopkins. Sorry.
Yeah, Sammy. It's Sammy Watkins from the Rams.
Yes.
Yeah. And with free agency opening tomorrow, obviously, you know, teams are having to do things. I mean, I don't think I've seen it this crazy in a while. Especially, I mean, Jordy Nelson was the big one. Like whoa. Like, we thought Jordy would be a lifer in Green Bay, and now the folks up in Nelson's Landing, I don't know if they're going to have to change the decorations or anything.
I saw a tweet from someone here that we work with saying that the Kansas population of Packers fans just decreased by 95%.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Here's what worries me, and I'm seeing a lot of people point this out on social media, including some of the real experts around the NFL. Who is the franchise that is synonymous with picking up guys that are supposedly on the back end of their careers and then finding a way to squeeze the last bit of juice out of them and make them really, really good for a couple of years?
I have a feeling you're going to the AFC West on this one.
Not the AFC West. Go to other coast. AFC East.
Oh, yeah. The Patriots.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who are you thinking of?
The Raiders.
Oh, well, they try to get the last bit of juice. They usually fail. No, the Patriots. I'm seeing a lot of people saying that Jordy Nelson would make a lot of sense on the Patriots. That would test me quite a bit. That would be hard.
It'd be hard to hate the Patriots.
Man, and see, I don't know if Brady is still around today. I would like to ask him his thoughts on this. I think that he has tweeted on this. In fact, I'll pull it up and see if he's getting excited. But, yeah, I've seen a lot of GIFs of, like, Bill Belichick, making some, like, frustrated action, and then the comment with it is waiting for Jordy Nelson to pick up his phone, something like that. Yeah, Brady did tweet about this. He retweeted Schefter's tweet and said, "And the Patriots just released Dola as an Amendola and then put a winky face emoji." I would not like that. Now, it would be better than him being in the AFC West outside of Kansas City. I really don't want him, on the Broncos or with the Raiders for that matter. But,
I'm thinking about it here. There's a lot of NFL teams that need some wide receiver help this year. It's just kind of been a crazy offseason for wide receivers.
There's going to be a market for him.
But I don't think the Patriots are one of them.
No, I think that, that's actually a good point you bring up, because a lot of people have said that's not really a position of need for the Patriots. But if you're the Patriots and you feel like this guy can still be an elite-level receiver for a year or two, wouldn't you want to try to shift some things around with the players that you currently have and bring them in?
So
I would think so.
There's been rumors now for a while that Dez Bryant might be leaving the Dallas Cowboys. That'd free up some money, of course, and leave a big wide receiver position open. Wouldn't mind seeing Jordy in a nice blue star and the silver and
getting past.
I know
from
that'd make a lot of people
Dak
puke.
Tech. Yeah,
absolutely.
I could handle that better than Patriots or Raiders, but I am bummed that he's not going to be with the Packers, because I've always, maybe you can criticize me for being like some kind of a bandwagon Packers fan, but it's always been one of those things where the Chiefs are my team. But if they're not competitive, I'd rather have the Packers win than any other team. I mean, it's a likable franchise. If you're not the Bears or the Vikings, the Packers are a likable franchise. And I can't imagine that Aaron Rodgers is very happy about this news today. Those two were on a wavelength for a long time.
Like I mentioned before, it felt like Jordy would be a lifer in Green Bay. Sounded like he liked it up there. Honestly, I'm not really a Packers fan. I root for Jordy Nelson. It kind of hurt me as well. Like, when I saw that news, I got the text like around 3:15, 3:30 that Jordy was going to be released, and I couldn't believe it. I knew his contract was coming up, but man,
well, and the
cap
Packers,
space, man.
The Packers have done a ton of moves in the last couple of days, and I saw this tweet too from a reporter that said that Jordy Nelson is indeed still wanting to play. He still feels like he can play, which I think is notable. With a lot of players, you would say, well, of course they still feel like they can play. But Jordy Nelson has been open in the last couple of seasons talking about how he does not want to play until he literally can't walk anymore. He has been open about wanting to retire sometime in the next few seasons.
I would, since you brought that up, it made me feel like I would hate to see an NFL without Jordy Nelson in it. That's not a bad time to call it, a day, because he's still really young. He's got young kids. I think he has plural kids.
I think.
And he always comes back and farms anyway. I know he enjoys to do stuff like that. He has plenty of money.
I think if his health is fine, I would say play two more years. You know, get a two-year contract somewhere. Preferably, if you're him, preferably with a contender. Try to get another ring. I saw someone saying that the Eagles should look at Jordy Nelson. That would be that's kind of weird to picture.
Yeah.
And for you as a Cowboys fan, I'm sure that would be a nightmare. But
as long as he doesn't go to the Giants.
Yeah, you know, find a two-year deal. Get some decent money out of it. You know, $20 million contract, something like that. And then ride off into the sunset, quite literally, on your tractor, Jordy Nelson. I think that would be great. And if it happens in Kansas City, then even better. Because I think that if you're Patrick Mahomes, you would love to have that kind of a locker room presence that can help be almost a second quarterback of your offense, really mentor some of these young guys. Because the Chiefs are entering a new era, and they suddenly do not have quite the leadership that they did just a couple of months ago. We'll take our final break of this first hour. Cole Manbeck coming your way at 5:10. But when we come back, season not over for the K-State women. They will host in the WNIT. Details next. A few more minutes left before the top of the hour. We'll have CBS News and then Cole Manbeck to start hour two. Just got this text into the text line. Man. And I thought the idea of Jordy being a Chief played with my emotions. How about this one? Any chance Jordy could come to K-State to be a coach? Right now, no. Because I think that he's going to have a lot of opportunities to make a lot more money than he could as an assistant coach at K-State. But one day, I could see it, maybe.
He might be too old to coach at K-State now, the way things are changing.
It depends. Does he want to coach or does he want to farm? Because and that's not a joke. He loves to buy land and you know, raise cattle, all that kind of stuff.
Can you picture Jordy Nelson on a football field blowing a whistle and yelling at somebody?
That's a good question. I don't know. This was just a text that just came in, so I haven't really given it a lot of thought, but I guess I could see that. I feel like if you're an NFL player, you can't, like, you can be passive in terms of comparing yourself to other NFL players, but you can't be an extremely passive person in general if you're going to be a wide receiver in the NFL. Like, you have to have some type A to you, and I think that he probably does, even if he seems like a pretty quiet guy. I know he's quiet off the field, but I would think that you get him into a coaching-type setting on the field, I think that he could get the players' attention. Now, looking at the switching gears to the women's bracket, not the women's NCAA tournament, but the women's NIT. The bracket for that was announced last night, and K-State will be back on the court and back at Bramlage Coliseum. Jeff Mitty's team will be hosting St. Louis on Thursday at 7 o'clock. The bracket is not seeded, so it's pretty unclear exactly what how things would work for K-State moving forward if they would continue to host. I know that it all has something to do with attendance. The other side of the pod, by the way, is Utah and UNLV. So if K-State were to beat St. Louis, they would either be playing Utah at home, UNLV at home, Utah at Utah, or UNLV in Vegas.
Jeff Mendy seemed like he was a little concerned about how well St. Louis can score the basketball. They're 75% as a team from the free throw line, which is pretty solid. And they have a point guard who was first team All-A-10.
I think
for a team that finished in the middle of the pack.
I think this is a good opportunity for K-State because they're a young team. And, you know, I feel like Coach Mitty probably feels the same way. With these young players and these freshmen, getting them some tournament experience, even if it's not the NCAA tournament, will be beneficial. I mean, I just don't feel that you can ever play too many games in a season when you're trying to figure out exactly what you're going to have going into next year. And we've certainly seen K-State have a lot of success in the past in the WNIT.
What I do like about the NIT is, first of all, of course, last year the women hosted the NCAA tournament, hosted three games, and I did the PA announcing for that. With the NCAA in town and controlling everything, it's pretty strict around there. Obviously, I had to be neutral, even though K-State was at home. I couldn't be more enthusiastic about K-State scoring than I would then with Stanford. It had to be equal. Even though I worked my way around it, I found a way to make sure the crowd got to say three on, you know, on threes made. I just had to do it as well for Stanford and for Drake.
And for New Mexico State, who almost beat Stanford.
Yeah, that was actually a really good game. But with the NIT, the WNIT, it's like it's a regular home game.
Oh, sweet.
That's what I love about it. I can still get crazy ecstatic for K-State, and I can be a downer for
St. Louis.
Yeah. So you can still bring that home court environment, of course. K-State will get to play all their videos and stuff. I don't know about like timeouts and stuff, but I love that it's going to be like a home court environment. It's not going to be ran by the NCAA. It's going to be more fun, I think. As for me, it's going to be more fun. And you get to watch the seniors again. This is my favorite part about it, because I missed the last two home games on the road being with K-State baseball. So I get to see at least Shaylin Martin, get to see Kaylee Page out there one more time, a couple of seniors that are from right down the road, east and west.
You know, I never got a chance to ask. Did you have an opportunity to get to the bottom of the duck and horses question with K-State seniors?
You know what? I kind of felt like I...
That's an annual tradition.
Right. I talked to both Shaylin and Kaylee today, and I forgot about it.
Oh, my goodness.
So I thought about it right as I was walking out of Bramlage, and I just walked away in shame. Like, I couldn't turn back.
You had one job.
Well, yes, in a way, but...
I always love getting the responses to K-State's women's basketball seniors to that question.
I'm pretty sure Haley Tejada has still said she'd rather take the one
horse-sized duck.
And I just...
Instead of the 100 duck-sized horses.
Go with the little things, you know?
I'm really, really upset that you didn't have a chance to get to that today. All right. That's going to finish off hour one. Still a lot of hoops to come in hour two. The threshold to be satisfied with K-State's season is pretty cut and dry this year as compared to last year's NCAA tournament. But when we come back, Cole Manbeck offers his thoughts on the matchup with Creighton. That's next on The Game.
By Briggs Auto Lane.
Let's have some fun. Let's go.
And BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The Game. Tyler Dreiling and now Mason both on the other side of the glass. Mitch taking off for Toynton Family Stadium. John is already there. He'll have the call for K-State baseball tonight against the Blue Jays of Creighton. And Mitch will be on the PA from Toynton as well. So with you for the next hour, and over that hour, a lot of basketball discussion as K-State prepares to face Creighton in the first round of the NCAA tournament on Friday in Charlotte, North Carolina. What the game could mean for K-State, or for the perception of K-State's season with the fans. I think that it's a lot more cut and dry going into this tournament than it was going into last year's tournament. A new twist on the 40-yard dash that I am going to propose at 5:40. Spoiler alert, it involves me being too lazy to run 40 yards. And we'll finish it off with You Can't Be Serious at 5:50. We'll also be joined by Cole Manbeck here in just a moment. If you want to get in touch with us later this hour, 537-1350, 866-776-1350. You can also tweet us at TheGameKMAN and at Tyler Dreiling. And now the text line is open as well. Text KMAN to 59457 to get started with that. Now joined by Cole Manbeck. And Cole, I want to first ask if your reaction was the same as mine to when the announcement was made with K-State and Creighton. With the order that things went as they were revealed, I saw Creighton pop up at the eight line right there. And at that point, I just had this thought in my head, yeah, it's going to be K-State. I was not surprised at all to see K-State get matched up with Creighton. How did it go down for you?
I was actually shocked that K-State came up so early in the bracket.
Really?
You know, we had the, yeah. I did not expect the first region for K-State to be in right off the bat, and I honestly thought K-State might get paired with a Missouri. I think that's a more intriguing matchup to me. You know, I don't think the committee probably gets caught up that much in the Marcus Foster storyline. You know, he's been gone now for 3 years. I think the storyline's being overplayed. I understand the media, and if I was still in the newspaper industry, I'd have to be writing about it as well. But to me, I mean, it's just not much of a story anymore in my eyes. I mean, look, we've heard Marcus Foster already comment about it last year in Sacramento when both teams were paired at the same tournament site. And none of the players in the current K-State team even know Marcus Foster. So, you know, to me, I just don't get too caught up in it, other than I think K-State has an advantage there because K-State's coaches know Marcus Foster's tendencies better than anyone.
Well, I am with you with the idea that the committee probably was not going so deep into their analysis as to see that Marcus Foster was, you know, a former member of the K-State basketball team and intentionally put them together. So I'm with you on that. But what do you make of how fans have reacted to that? Because it seems like for the majority of them, that's what they want to believe.
Well, I mean, everyone can believe what they want ultimately, but you know, to me, I just don't think that's something that should be that big of a story. Look, Marcus Foster is a really good player, but I think K-State can force him into mistakes. And you know, he was good at K-State his freshman year, but I've watched a lot of Creighton basketball. Like I watch a lot of basketball, and you know, Creighton's on a lot here in Kansas City, and so I've watched them quite a few times. And where he can get into trouble sometimes, while his shooting percentage has improved this year, you know, he can be very hot and cold in games. And you know, he's a guy that sometimes will try to take it upon himself to do too much. And if you watch Creighton play, sometimes he does that. And I think that's where he could get in trouble. And ultimately, I think if you're thinking about it this way for K-State, is, you know, I don't know if he's going to really want to stick it to K-State in his mind, if he's going to be thinking about that. But if he is, I almost think he could get Creighton into some trouble and try to play hero ball a little too much out there. You know, I think K-State can play to his weaknesses a little bit. He's obviously strengthened his game since he left. He became a better ball handler and better at attacking the basket. They post him up some. But, yeah, I think, again, this game's more about, you know, to me, the best player on Creighton's team is Khyree Thomas. You know, if you watch him play, you know, he's an all-around elite defender, two-time Big East Player of the Year defensively, and he averages 15 points a game. He can bring the ball up the court, play point guard, and he can shoot it 42% from three. So to me, he's the most complete player on that team, and I think he poses the biggest danger to K-State in this game.
Well, you're definitely right in saying that that he's probably getting overlooked because of Marcus Foster, but I think that one of the reasons that Foster gets brought up so much is because we're going to see Barry Brown going up against him, and you're talking about an all-Big 12, you know, all-defensive team player in Barry Brown, so it's kind of an unstoppable force versus an immovable object situation. Who would you compare Marcus Foster to in the Big 12 for Barry Brown's perspective and what it's going to be like going up against him?
Oh, boy, yeah, I'd have to, I'm trying to think, scramble through my head really quickly of guys that are kind of built like Foster and play similar to him in this league. You know, look, I'll be honest, Tyler, I would not be shocked at all if K-State tried to put Barry Brown on Khyree Thomas.
Really?
Well, I think they might mix and match. Now, ultimately, I think you're right. I think they're going to go, for the most part, Barry Brown on Foster. But then I think they'll also mix and match and try to take Khyree Thomas away. It's an interesting defensive dynamic when you think about it. And so I'm trying to come up with a comparison in the Big 12 that plays like Foster. Because Foster's a little thicker. You know, he's a stronger kid now. He's put on some more muscle. And he can take you down to the block and post up as well. And sometimes that's what Creighton will do, is he'll post up on the lower block and just try to out-muscle you. You know, I'm coming up empty.
Yeah,
really comparing anyone in the league.
Yeah, to be totally fair, I can't really, you know, I asked the question and I don't really have a great answer for you either. I just wondered if there was anyone that may have come to your mind, but totally understand if that's not the case. And something else I wanted to ask you about was one of the tweets that you posted shortly after the matchup was announced, and I thought it was very interesting that Creighton is 332nd out of 351 teams in offensive rebounding percentage. They are not a team that rebounds the ball very well. Does this seem like yet another opportunity for McCall Maywean to emerge as the big man of the future for K-State?
You know what, I think so, Tyler. I think K-State has an advantage down low, and the reason being, and the reason I don't mind the Creighton matchup is because once Creighton lost Martin Crample earlier in the season, the 19th game of the year, you know, they really lost their physical post presence that plays down in the post. Now, the remaining post players are more so guys that, you know, are pick-and-pop guys that go out and shoot the three. So while they can match up a little bit with K-State in that regard, and I think Mikel Maywain can certainly take advantage down in the post because you're going up against a Toby Hegner, who's a guy that likes to, you know, stand on the outside more, not really a banger down low. And then you've got a guy in Jacob Everson, who's a freshman who they pulled the red shirt off of earlier this year once Crample went down. And so, you know, they're not too physical in the post. And you're right. I mean, the rebounding percentages play to K-State's advantage because we know how bad K-State has been at defensive rebounding this year and how they've suffered the consequences for that. We saw it against KU in the Sprint Center just on Friday night. The second chance points killed K-State. And so Creighton's not really a team that's going to look to take advantage of the second chance points. They get back on defense. And so to me, that's an advantage for K-State. But, you know, they're not a great, great defensive team. They're a little better than advertised, Creighton, that is, because of Khyree Thomas and how elite of a defender he is, his length. But down low, you know, I think K-State can pound the ball inside and has an advantage there.
I'm going to ask you a little bit more about the macro here in the season as a whole. After what K-State did in Kansas City with the win over TCU, an emotional win over TCU, and then given the hand that they were dealt against Kansas, the way that they fought, if they were to parlay that with a win over Creighton and then a loss to Virginia in the second round, don't you feel like pretty much unanimously K-State fans would at least be satisfied with K-State's season as a whole? Did we lose Cole? May have lost him. We'll see if we can get him back on here in a few minutes. Mason, if you could try to get him back, that would be great. That was something, actually, that was a question that was going to lead me into our next segment, which is going to be about what this season could be perceived as if K-State were to beat Creighton, because again, I think going into last year's NCAA tournament, there was so much mixed opinion on, does winning a game in the first four against Wake Forest count? Does it not? Do you need to beat Cincinnati for it to feel like you actually won a game in the tournament? We no longer have that conflict with this. We'll talk about that more in the next segment, but we have Cole back. Cole, were you able to hear that question? Very odd. So we...
he can hear us.
Oh, but...
we can't hear him, apparently.
Okay. All right, so...
Here you guys. Can you hear me?
Oh, there we go.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
All right, could you hear that last question?
I heard for the most part the question, Tyler, so you were asking me if fans should be excited or satisfied with the season's results.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, so I think for the most part the fan base should be, you know, pleased if they can knock off Creighton. You know, they'll have won an NCAA tournament game, won 23 games this year, finished fourth in the league with everyone returning in all likelihood next year and adding a very talented piece in Sean Williams to next year's team, a guard that they're bringing in. So you think another offseason of development for guys like Mikel Maywain, Cartier Jara, you know, and go on. I mean, this team could be, in my mind, if they win a tournament game this year, and even if they don't, they could still finish second in the league next year. But to me, I think they would be projected to be second or third in the Big 12 standings in the preseason poll next year. So really to capitalize on that momentum. And look, I'm not going to put K-State at odds of not being able to beat Virginia. You know, I've watched Virginia quite a bit. And while they are an elite defensive team, they are a team in the NCAA tournament year after year that has played down in terms of their seed. They have underachieved. And it's a Virginia team that just lost their fourth leading scorer that was announced today. And DeAndre Hunter, a freshman averaging 9 points a game. And this is a Virginia team that only has, you know, 5-6 guys that really can score the basketball. So that's a big blow for them. They're beatable. I know they're 31-2, but, you know, if K-State can hit shots in that game, Virginia can struggle to score. They're not an elite offensive team by any means. So, you know, I think K-State, if they can get by Creighton, I would not put it past them to make that a heck of a game against Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's certainly possible. I don't want to, you know, do any counting of the chickens or anything like that, but it is notable news today that we did mention in the first hour that the ACC sixth man of the year, DeAndre Hunter, will not play in the NCAA tournament for Virginia. Cole, a couple more before we let you go. I did see that, you know, the opening line on this game was Creighton by 2. You feel like that's about where it should be, or more or less, do you expect K-State to win this game?
I think it probably should have opened up as a pick'em. I think it dropped to +1 a day after the line came out yesterday. I saw it as a 1-point dog. Now for K-State, they did open up at 2, 2.5. Look, I think K-State's the better team. I think K-State's going to win this game. And I think it sets up a fun matchup against Virginia. And fun, I use that loosely because it's never fun to play Virginia. It's not fun to watch. It's not fun to watch Virginia by any means usually. But, you know, it would be exciting to have an opportunity to knock off the number one ranked team in the tournament, the number one ranked team in the country. Yeah, to me, that would be fun just to have a chance at that. And I think it would be a good game. So, yeah, I think, Tyler, the line probably should be more of a pick'em, and I would lean toward K-State winning this game if Dean Wade and Barry Brown aren't hampered by the injuries they suffered, especially Dean Wade.
Yeah, I think I'm more or less in agreement with you on that. And, boy, what an opportunity for Bruce Weber over the course of just 3 days to basically win back the entire fan base if they were actually able to beat Creighton and then Virginia. Cole, I came up with a name for a Marcus Foster comparison in the Big 12, and I want to see your analysis on this. So, Lindell Wigginton.
All right. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, Wigginton's got some size to him, and he shoots a three, but also will post guys up. I think that's definitely a fair comparison. I was trying to think through, you know, Texas Tech guys. They have some guys that are built similarly, but they're not elite scorers like Foster, other than Keenan Evans, and I don't think they're comparative. So, yeah, I could see Wigginton be a strong comparison there. That works.
Yeah, he's listed at 6'2", averaged 17 points a game this year. He shot 40% from three, and he finished a season with four straight games scoring 20-plus. So I think that's about as close as you're going to get in the Big 12.
Well, let's hope Marcus Foster doesn't have 20-plus on Friday.
Or at the very least, if he does, that no one else for Creighton is able to do much. Cole, really appreciate the time as always this afternoon. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
That is Cole Manbeck from PowerCat Game Day. Appreciate his time. Going to take our first break of the second hour when we come back. One major difference from last year's tournament to this one from K-State's perspective. That's next on KMA. During the break, saw a tweet from the official March Madness Twitter account. Consider this your final warning. March Madness starts in 15 minutes. And it kind of hits you like a, you know, it's weird because, again, it doesn't feel like the NCAA tournament until we get to Thursday. But then I guess I probably felt differently last year because K-State was actually playing in the first four. So I kind of want to start there.
The thing for me about the first four is I think it's a really good thing for the 16 seeds involved. And I'd maybe like to see them advance to making it just four 16 seeds. Oh, the four games are amongst eight 16 seeds because that gives the 16 seed the actual chance to win a game. You know, in the NCAA tournament, and then you can bump a couple teams down to lower seed lines. So maybe Oklahoma doesn't have to be a 10 seed, and instead they're like an 11 or a 12.
Yeah, that's not a bad way to look at it. It starts at 5:40 with LIU, Brooklyn, and Radford, and then at 8:00 it's St. Bonaventure and UCLA. Now, last year we had to watch, but will you willingly watch tonight and tomorrow?
Well, I'm running the board for K-State baseball, yes, I will be tuned into the Highlanders and Blackbirds, but I would have watched anyways because I really like St. Bonaventure.
You like them to win a game?
Yeah, I like them to win at least one game.
Well, let's see. So they would, if they beat UCLA, they would have Florida in an 11-6 matchup.
Yeah, I like the Bonnies in that one.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's it's kind of a stereotypical sports radio topic talking about the first four. Is it good for the NCAA tournament? Everything like that. I think it's fine, and that it's really overblown. I mean, it's going to be a pretty big deal if you are playing in it, and if you're not, you're not going to pay a ton of attention, and that's fine on both sides. That's fine. Now, what the one take that I will have that I am very firm with the first four is, you do not have to pick the first four as part of your bracket challenge or like your office pool. It is dumb that you would have to turn your bracket in by right now in order to be in because you have to pick the first four.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah. So now, in that context, maybe you wouldn't say that that's actually part of the tournament. But that brings me into what I wanted to talk about in this segment, which is the difference this year compared to last year for the perception of K-State's season and the NCAA tournament. Last year, I mean, whether it was on the air, because I know John and I talked about this on social media, on the message boards, everywhere, everyone wanted to talk about, you know, if K-State beats Wake Forest in the first four, is that the threshold to be satisfied with the season? Slash, do you consider that a tournament win, or does K-State need to go out to Sacramento and beat Cincy for you to be satisfied? And there was a big division on with the fan base's opinion on this. I kind of fell in the middle and said that I think it should count technically as an NCAA tournament win, but I would totally understand fans not being satisfied with just beating Wake Forest and then losing to Cincinnati, which is essentially what happened. This year, I think that it is a lot more cut and dry. I think that if you lose to Creighton, you're probably, in a general sense, not going to feel satisfied with K-State's basketball season. There probably will be some people that will, just from the standpoint of how many guys K-State's bringing back next year and the way they played against KU, you know, the heart that they fought with against KU in the Big 12 semis, there might be some fans that are fine with it. I think that the majority of fans would not necessarily be really angry, but would just be dissatisfied with the season. If you beat Creighton and then you lose to Virginia, I think that there is no debate to be had. If you beat Creighton and then lose to the number one overall seed in the tournament, you should be satisfied as a fan with what happened this year, and you should be excited about what potentially could happen going into next year.
My expectations and what I want to see go a little bit further than that. Obviously, you have to beat Creighton, but I want to see that they're at least competing or trying to compete with Virginia and not just go out there and have the mindset, we're supposed to lose to these guys, they're the best, and they go out and get throttled. You know, try and make it a game. Make it some of those KU games in past years, it's just been, hey, try and give them a run for their money, and if you lose by 15, great. But if K-State goes out and loses by 25 to Virginia, then I think you're still upset with how things went down.
No, I can understand that. I think at that point you're talking about, are you satisfied with how things happened or how things transpired on paper versus what you actually saw? Because if you're looking at it on paper and said, okay, K-State for the first time in Bruce Weber's tenure got to the round of 32, then that's basically all you need. That's pretty black and white. But yeah, if K-State, if you were watching the game and K-State loses 60-30, which is how a lot of Virginia's games go because they are just so ridiculous defensively, then I can understand why you would feel like you didn't really do anything other than beat the teams that were even or below you in terms of talent, and you failed all year long to beat a team that was actually above you because you did go 0-3 against Kansas, 0-2 against West Virginia, 0-2 against Texas Tech, and then you would also have a loss to Virginia thrown in there.
And I agree with what Cole said earlier, is he's optimistic about when K-State, if they're able to play Virginia. A lot of people have the mindset that Virginia is not the one seed you want to draw. I think for K-State, Virginia is. I really think that they're a lower scoring team, and if K-State can just get hot shooting like we've seen they have been able to at times this season, I think that really benefits them to play Virginia as their one seed rather than somebody else.
I don't know. I tend to go the other way just because it seems like K-State has been at their best when they've played teams that are poor defensively, even if they're pretty good offensively. When K-State plays teams that they are allowed to get in the paint against, things seem to go pretty well for them. We certainly saw that against TCU. TCU and Oklahoma were a couple of the teams that didn't play good defense against K-State this year, and K-State did a good job overall against them, not to mention, you know, Iowa State and Oklahoma State. So I would tend to go the other way, but I will say that it wouldn't shock me if K-State were competitive against Virginia, again, if we get to that point, because he was right, Cole was right in saying that Virginia does have a tendency to play down to its competition at times.
Yeah, and I think the same can maybe be said for K-State in certain situations as well.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily in the NCAA tournament, but overall, I think K-State at times over the course of Bruce Weber's time and maybe in general the past 10 years, they've been a team that tends to play down to their opponent.
And, I mean, like I said with Cole in the last segment, if you're Bruce Weber or you're one of these players, you've got to be feeling extremely excited right now because all of the negativity that you've heard, not just this season, but for a long time, you can pretty much get the entirety of the fan base on board over the next week with how things go. If you actually can take down Virginia, I mean, again, K-State's worried about Creighton first.
Exactly,
I get that.
Yeah.
I totally understand that, but we aren't players. We're on the radio. We can talk about it. If K-State can beat Creighton and then find a way to knock off Virginia and get to the Sweet 16 and bring back the entire roster next year, yes, every single K-State fan at that point should be on board. And that would have to be a huge weight off of the shoulders of K-State's coaching staff and the roster.
Anybody involved with K-State, I think even the administration would
feel probably.
Some
I mean, if you're Gene Taylor, you would have to feel good about the fact that, you know, I don't have to even contemplate any sort of move right now. That would certainly be nice. So, yeah, I mean, the odds of this happening, I think, are 5%. If you want to say that K-State and Creighton is a 50-50 game, and then you say that beating Virginia is like a 10% chance, that mathematically is 5% that both of those are going to happen. But it's nice to dream, and that's what March is all about, is it not? I think that every 8 and 9 seed going into this tournament, actually, let's just say every team seeded 7 or above has to feel some sort of optimism because of the fact that we've been talking about all year how college basketball doesn't really have a lot of great elite teams in it, a lot of really good teams, but no team that you look at and you're like, yeah, we do not have any chance whatsoever.
I think one of the weirdest things about this tournament is there's a lot of, if this happens, then this could happen. As in, if Oklahoma gets past Rhode Island, I think it makes it a really interesting matchup with Duke. And, I mean, Oklahoma's a team that we've seen how they can play at times, and if Trae Young gets hot and can get the rest of the Sooners involved, then who knows what could happen. You could see Duke go down early.
I think this tournament is kind of similar to what we've seen a couple times in the last few years, where we may see more upsets in terms of seeds in this tournament than we are accustomed to, but they won't necessarily be upsets in terms of your actual expectations because there is so much depth from top to bottom in college basketball. There is not I'll just phrase it this way. I feel like the gap between Virginia and the last team into the tournament, you know, let's say Oklahoma, the gap is smaller than you typically see. And that's why it's going to be an exciting few weeks as March Madness gets started in 3 minutes. If you're following the first four, the NCAA tweeting out that this is your last warning that March Madness is starting. 5:40 tip-off for 16 seed LIU Brooklyn and 16 seed Radford. You'll also have the battle between 11 seeds St. Bonaventure and UCLA coming up tonight. Both of those games televised on True TV. Coming up next, I've got a new take for the 40-yard dash in light of the reported time that Byron Pringle ran at K-State's Pro Day today. Wow, it's impressive, and we'll talk about it next. K-State baseball coming your way at the top of the hour. K-State and Creighton from Toynton Family Stadium. We're going to get into my new twist on the 40-yard dash in just a second. One of the big topics I've seen here just in the local area regarding the NCAA tournament, everyone is talking about Penn, man. Everyone loves the Quakers as the first upset in history of a 16 over a 1 seed when Penn takes on KU. Now, I will say that it did catch my attention. Some of the actual metrics with that Penn team, they are really good at defending the three, which is a very important part of KU's game. I saw that KenPom said that this is like the best 16 seed in the last 16 years or something like that in the NCAA tournament. And we know KU's a little bit more vulnerable. So that means that everyone is talking about this. But I think that that has to mean that KU is just going to absolutely curb stomp Penn
and go on a deep run or something. But just think how great it would be if KU is that first one seed to lose to a 16.
That would be an all-timer. I mean, We know about Bucknell. We know about Bradley. We know about VCU. But if you lose as a 1 to a 16, I mean, I'll tell you this. The tweet of the moment next week would be fun. Really fun.
They'd be calling for Bill Self's head.
Oh, absolutely
you know,
they would.
That year that K-State, and it was the fateful Jamar Samuels game, but those first and second rounds in Pittsburgh, in the first round, I thought Syracuse was on the ropes against UNC Asheville, and then towards the end, Asheville kind of got some unfavorable calls, and Syracuse was able to advance. But watching that game, I thought the Cats might get to play a 16 seed in the second round, and then, you know, a young Mason Voth's dreams just came crumbling down when Syracuse won, and then Jamar Samuels was out.
I'm looking at 538's projections, their bracket projections, and you go through all of the 1 versus 16 matchups. Virginia, 98% chance to beat UMBC. Xavier, 99% chance to beat Texas Southern. Villanova, 99% chance to beat Radford. They're giving Penn a 5% chance. A 5% chance. Like, that's not zero. I just totally feel like the hype is going to result in it not measuring up at all and KU being ahead by 23 at halftime, but I want it so bad. I want it almost as bad as I want K-State to beat Virginia to get to the Sweet 16.
Syracuse was down 4 at halftime to UNC Asheville that year, and it took them an 11-point winning margin in the second half to beat UNC Asheville. I thought the Bulldogs were going to get it done.
We've got close. K-State hosted its pro day. K-State football hosted its pro day today. They never opened that to the media, which is a bummer. But an incredible report that came out of Pro Day from Therese Paylor of the Kansas City Star was that Byron Pringle ran a 4.32 40. 4.32. If that's legit, first of all, that would have been faster than any time that a receiver ran at the combine last week. The fastest time by a receiver was from G.J. Chark out of LSU, 4.34. If Pringle ran that, and we know that he's a pretty strong receiver, we know he's a pretty good route runner, I would have to think that your stock would be pretty high at that point, would it not?
Oh, he just keeps shooting up the draft board because he had a great combine, but a 4.32 with the way he plays, that's pretty amazing.
Now, I think in the two 40s that he ran, I saw a 4.32 and a 4.38. So, you know, I would think that if he ran like 10 40-yard dashes, he's certainly not going to average 4.32. But just having the capability to run that is pretty amazing. And it actually got me thinking because, you know, it's another kind of stereotypical sports radio topic. What 40 time could we run if we actually tried? I've got a new take on it. How about instead of that, because, see, 40 yards is a little long for me. It's a little long for me. Maybe it's a little long for you, too.
Yeah, I get you.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So how about we do it this way instead? How about we measure how many yards we can run in 4.32 seconds? So in the time that it took Byron Pringle to run 40, how many yards do you feel like you could cover? I would say my goal would be, like, getting more than 25. If I could get like 27, 28.
Yeah, I would shoot for 28.
That would probably be my goal. And I have no idea. Like, I really don't know how that would turn out. But doesn't that sound more fun than running 40 yards? You can just stop running as soon as you get to 4.32 seconds and take the final 12 yards off.
But there's something about being able about running the 40-yard dash and seeing how terribly your time compares to someone that's a quality athlete.
Did you see the video of Rich Eisen running the 40?
That's one of my favorite parts of the combine every year.
In a full suit. Yeah, that's pretty fun. But I don't know. I think that that's an interesting way of looking at it. Like, take the best 40 time from the combine every year and then see how many yards you can do compared to that in the same amount of time. It's just reversing what you're measuring, essentially.
I think you're onto something there. And maybe anybody that criticizes the times of people's 40-yard dashes, they should have to go and run compared to whoever they criticized.
And you know how confident Mitch Fortner is with his running. because he claims that he would beat, or he would beat all of the K-State media in a foot race, and he did not shy away from that. He was very adamant about that. I was talking to him about this in the sports office earlier, and of course he was saying, "Oh yeah, you know, I can get 35 yards or something like that." He said something in the 30s. I don't know. I still think that he comes off as being a little bit overconfident, and I'd like to see what he could actually do from that standpoint. But anyway, just an idea to improve the 40 for unathletic people like us. Just make us run 25 or 30 yards instead of 40. We got K-State baseball coming your way in 10 minutes. K-State and Creighton from Toynton Family Stadium. We'll finish off the show with You Can't Be Serious next.
You can't be serious with that shot!
Gosh, he's beautiful. Did you hear that?
So, we'll open it up to questions.
Johnny Idiot Face over there is never going to bring you a title.
This guy sucks.
Cliff Kingsbury gets me hot and bothered, and I love it. There, I said it. That was from a man.
I'm a 4-3 wide receiver. Why should I play at Michigan?
You are?
That was a clunk. There's not much I can do about that.
You can't be serious.
Well, this was a quote that made the rounds as the matchups were announced for the NCAA tournament bracket. Did you see what Missouri's Kevin Puryear had to say?
I did.
He said to the media, quote, "I was praying to God we didn't end up in Wichita. There is nothing in Wichita." Okay, two things about this. One, I have been on the record making jokes about Wichita. I agree that it's probably not the best destination for an NCAA tournament fan to spend the weekend. I think that's fair, right?
Yeah.
I'd rather go to Charlotte than Wichita.
Yeah.
Okay. However, you are not a fan. You are a player. You're not going to have any time to go out clubbing in Wichita. So what does it matter if Wichita is a fun city or not? Because all you're going to be seeing are the inside of hotels, the inside of the arena, and the media room. That is basically what the NCAA tournament experience is going to be for players. So he took a lot of heat from some very adamant defenders of the great city of Wichita that wanted to correct him and say, no, Wichita is awesome.
What did they try coming back at him with about Wichita?
Oh, just mentioning some of the best restaurants in Wichita. I don't know what else.
Chain or nice restaurants?
like decent places, yeah.
Tell him to stop by a new way or something.
I did like this response from someone I follow on Twitter named Travis. He said, "Dude, your job is to focus on your process to survive and advance in the NCAA tournament, not critique the restaurant selection on Kellogg Avenue." Very, very true. And you know what? I mean, I think Mizzou might be one and done anyway, so he's not going to have to spend too long wherever Mizzou was shipped off to.
I tell you what, he must have grown up in a place that had a lot of stuff to do, because growing up in Hutchinson, which is about an hour away from Wichita, Wichita's the place to be. That's the place to go. And you go down Mays Road and you get to check out,
like, relatively speaking?
Yeah, you would go down Buffalo and check out Buffalo Wild Wings, go to Dick's Sporting Goods. That was a great weekend for me if I got to do that.
You are not painting Hutch with a very beautiful picture here.
Hutch, great place to grow up, just not a lot to do, unless you like to eat. They're growing in restaurant size and probably belt size, too, for many people.
Something else I wanted to throw in here, UConn fired Kevin Ollie over the weekend for cause. Basically, UConn is going to try to make the case that, oh, yeah, you know, we got some NCAA violations going on up in here. Come on.
How
employ Jim Calhoun?
How crazy is it that a school is willingly wanting to say we committed some NCAA violations? That way they don't have to pay Kevin Ollie any money.
The problem is not the NCAA violations, because if you win, you find ways to cover them up. We have most definitely seen that from a lot of the blue blood programs across the country. The problem was that UConn is awful. Their program is just not very good right now. They don't have a lot of talent. They were, like, what, a 500 team this year? finish toward the bottom of their conference. Yeah, that is why he got fired. But I just, of course, the school comes out and says, "Oh yeah, you know, we haven't been behaving very well. We've got to clean this up." No, if UConn were a one seed in the NCAA tournament, you're telling me you would have fired him? Okay, just insulting the intelligence there a little bit. It's been a fun show. It's always fun around this time of the year, especially when K-State is involved in the NCAA tournament, which is officially, unofficially underway with the first four right now between LIU, Brooklyn, and Radford.
Out to a hot start, 16-9.
Uh-oh, look out. Could be the makings of a Cinderella. That's going to wrap it up for the game. Make sure to check out the podcast if you missed anything, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Sending it out to Toynton for Mitch and Mason. I'm Tyler. We'll see you later.